Welcome. There were several debuts in the Bundesliga this week after the closing of the January transfer window. We discussed the moves that stood out in the month of transfers and what they could mean for the rest of the season. Also, Julian Nagelsmann is reportedly under fire. How much longer will he be at Hoffenheim? And Matt Fort caught up with some Dortmund fans in Cologne in Peter Stöger's homecoming. This is Tribuna Weekly. Davis Van Opdorp here with Jonathan Harding and Matt Ford. Jonathan, take us through the match day.
German Federal League Division 1, match day 21. The First Football Club of Cologne, 2. Ballgame Sport Prussia 09 Dortmund, 3. Hertha Berlin Sport Club, 1. Gymnastics and Sports Society 1899 Hoffenheim, 1. Sport Club Freiburg, 0. Bayer 04 Leverkusen, 0. Football Club Schalke 04, 1. Sport Club Werder Bremen, 2. The First Football Club of Mainz 05, 0. Football Club Bavaria Munich, 2. Club for Physical Exercise Wolfsburg Football, 1. Club for Agility Games Stuttgart, 1. Club for Physical Exercise Prussian Mönche Gladbach, 0. Lawn Ball Sport Leipzig, 1. Football Club Augsburg, 3. Sports Community Frankfurt United, 0. Hamburger Sport Club, 1. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896, 1.
So Cologne against Dortmund was a very interesting game in terms of all the narratives that were there. It was Michy Batshuayi's first game in a Dortmund kit. It was Peter Stöger's return to Cologne. And as Matt found out when he went there, that Cologne and Dortmund fans actually don't hate each other. So Matt was in Cologne to catch the game, and he caught up with some Dortmund fans, and here is what he came back with.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Tribune podcast. We're back on the road again, and it's a cold, dark Friday night in Cologne. FC Köln against Borussia Dortmund. Some major players are missing, other people are returning. Aubameyang is one person who, of course, won't be available for Borussia Dortmund tonight, but former Cologne coach Peter Stöger is back in the city where he spent 5 years as head coach. We're outside the ground now having a beer with a few Dortmund fans. Benedikt, the first question I have to ask you is about, well, the big transfer news that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang finally left Borussia Dortmund. What's your opinion on that?
I think it's good that Aubameyang is now make his way to Arsenal because it's important that the team want to be someone who disturb it, and I think it's the best way to make a transfer to Arsenal.
Last season, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang won the Golden Boot in the Bundesliga. He scored 31 goals. Is that not going to be a big problem for Borussia Dortmund?
Yeah, it could be a problem, but I think it's more important to have a good team and have a team who are nice to each other. I can't tell it in English so good. It's the better the team is. The team spirit is more important than one man in this team, and I will hope that Alexander Isak and Michy Batshuayi will be a good striker than Aubameyang, a better striker than Aubameyang.
Of course, Aubameyang's not the first important player to leave Borussia Dortmund in recent years. Yeah. Kevin Mkhitaryan, Ilkay Gundogan, Mats Hummels, the list goes on and on, unfortunately. Yeah. Do you think Borussia Dortmund have a long-term problem?
I don't know exactly, but I only want to say one sentence for it. Borussia Dortmund, the club is bigger than one player. The club is bigger than one player. That's the only one what I can say.
Of course, that's exactly what the banner on the Südtribüne said last week, isn't it? Kein Spieler ist größer als der Verein.
No player is bigger than
the club.
Yeah, yes.
I think that's a very important message. Yeah. Moving on to the new coach at Borussia Dortmund, Peter Stöger. Obviously, he used to be coach here in Cologne. How do you think he has done so far?
Since now,
two wins, three draws. I think.
Yeah. Two wins, three draws. During last year in December, it was okay. But I think in this year we have only three draws in this year against Mainz, Freiburg, and who was the next one?
So the three draws were Wolfsburg,
yeah.
Hertha, and Hoffenheim.
Yeah, that was.
No, Hoffenheim was a win, wasn't it?
It was a win in the last. Yeah. That's not enough for us. He is a defense man. He wants to. Er möchte die Defensive stabilisieren.
Yeah, he wants to stabilize the defense.
Yes, of course. And I don't know what is our way. At the moment,
You said before that you have a lot of faith in the young players like Alexander Isak, like Jadon Sancho, maybe a little bit of experience now with Michy Batshuayi. Do you think that Isak and Sancho are experienced enough?
To be
the main men for Dortmund?
I hope so. I hope so. Ich würde so gerne auf Deutsch antworten. I want to answer in German.
There you go. Everyone's heard now that if you're going to keep listening to this podcast, you're going to have to learn German because the people we speak to don't speak English anymore.
Okay. I have a translator here. The name of the translator is Matthias.
Anyway, we're here outside the ground, and one of the interesting things about Cologne and Dortmund is that the fans actually get on quite well. There are lots of Dortmund fans here talking to a lot of Cologne fans. We have red and white scarves. We have black and white scarves. Why aren't you fighting?
I can't understand the question. Why should we fighting?
We're football fans.
Yeah, but we only love our club. Cologne love his club, and that's okay. We want to drink beer here. We want to have a lot of fun, and that's what I love football.
That's one of the differences, I think, between English and German football. Finally, can we have a prediction for the game tonight? What do you think the score will be?
I make in my kick tip club. I make 2-1 for Borussia Dortmund. But if I have to think about it really, then I would say 0-0.
0-0. Okay. Well, hopefully we'll have a more exciting game than 0-0. Julia, you said you were not going to talk on the podcast, but I want a prediction of you. What will the score be tonight?
We were just discussing the same thing before we met you, and I said the same. I said I'm really hoping for a tight match where Borussia Dortmund will be the winner, but. Honestly, I mean, a draw is also possible, but I hope for a tight victory for Borussia.
2-1? 3-1?
2-1 also.
2-1 to Dortmund as well. Matthias, you're not escaping. Give us a prediction.
Short 1-1.
1-1. And finally?
Tim.
Yes, him.
Now, I think it will be 1-1, but I hope for a 2-1 for Borussia Dortmund.
There we go. We've got a bit of a mixture of Dortmund fans who definitely want to win, expect to win, but perhaps recognise that it won't be that easy. Thank you, everyone, for the time being. Thank you. So, as we've just been hearing from the Borussia Dortmund fans, no player is bigger than the club, and that seems to be the case regarding Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. And with Felix here, a football journalist here in Cologne, Felix, would you agree with the sentiment from the Dortmund fans?
Well, generally speaking, yes, especially when it comes to Borussia Dortmund. The club has proved more than once that the magnitude of this club is bigger than any player, and that includes any player. And I think their fans every single week prove just that. I mean, just look at the yellow wall, just look at the magnitude of their support, the amount of noise they're making, of the banners, of their ultras. Every single thing about this club just shouts that it's just bigger than any single individual.
The replacement, of course, Michy Batshuayi. Any opinions on it? Do you think he'll work well for Dortmund?
I actually do. I think in terms of his playing style, in terms of what is he going to bring, he's a quick player, he's a technical player. He just needs to find the right tactical setup for him. And that's, of course, the job of Peter Struger, former Cologne coach. But I really do think he's going to do well here in terms of their playing style, in terms of the attacking players they have, in terms of Pulisic's speed and crosses. All signs are that he's going to do well. I'm not entirely sure if he has a buyout clause in his loan.
I don't think he does, no.
Okay, that's a bit of a disappointment. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I really think he's going to do well for them.
The last time that me and you spoke on the podcast, it was a lot warmer and a lot sunnier in nice, sunny southern Stuttgart. Tonight's obviously different conditions, but Peter Stöger is returning to Cologne as Dortmund coach. What are you expecting from the game?
I'm expecting Dortmund to be solid defensively, first and foremost. That has been Peter Stöger's emphasis ever since he started being Borussia Dortmund's coach. I'm expecting Cologne to try and play long balls, as they did so far, to Simon Terodde, the new signing, and see how it's going to play out. I mean, it's going to be a very interesting game. Atmosphere is going to be intense, but in a good way. So I think it's safe to say we are all looking forward to it.
Prediction?
Hard to say. 2-1 Dortmund.
2-1. We're also here with Francois. Francois, you've come all the way from France to Cologne. Can you explain a little bit about what is the attraction for a Cologne match in comparison to, say, a match in France?
I think the atmosphere. Like, the atmosphere is insane in Cologne. And Cologne is quite like a football city. And I'm not sure we have this in France. Like, I mean, Cologne is like in the bottom of the league, and there are still like 50,000 of people who come to the game. So just for the atmosphere.
Is the Bundesliga, is German football popular in France?
No, not at all. No, the Premier League, like the English Championship, the Liga is very popular. Of course, La Ligue 1. Like the French league, but Bundesliga, honestly, no.
So if it's not popular, how did you get interested or involved with Cologne, with German football?
Because I like football, and I'm in Cologne now, and I want to see games. So if I have the opportunity to go to the games, I will go.
What are you expecting from the game tonight?
I don't know. First, just a good atmosphere, like a good game. I want to see, like, two good teams, like, not just defense team, and yeah, just a good game and yeah, a good atmosphere.
Prediction?
Okay, 2-1 for Cologne.
We've heard a lot of 2-1 to Cologne this time. We've heard a lot of 2-1s, mainly for Dortmund. Francois thinks for Cologne. Personally, I think it'll be a less close affair. I'm going for 2-0 to Borussia Dortmund, but we'll talk to you after the game. So now, just a quick update from during the game. Second half, Cologne have equalised for the second time. It's now 2-2. Just as all hope was gone, Jorge Mere from the set piece has equalised again for the Billy Goats. The south stand, as you can hear, is absolutely rocking now. Let's see if Cologne can hold on to a valuable point. Full time, and it's finished. FC Köln 2, Borussia Dortmund 3. On paper, a 3-2 win for Dortmund does them a lot of good. Two goals for new signing on loan Michy Batshuayi. We'll have Dortmund fans thinking that that's a good replacement for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. But from a Cologne point of view, it might be a defeat, but as you can hear here on the Zuidkurve here in Cologne, that was a performance that pleased the Cologne fans. Let's have a listen to this for a second. So as you can hear, the Cologne fans here aren't disheartened, because I suppose at the end of the day, if Cologne are to have a chance of staying up in this league, they're going to have to beat teams around them, not teams like Borussia Dortmund. However, against Dortmund, they did come from behind twice. Simon Zola and Jorge Mere with the goals here. But obviously, ultimately, 1-0 as they were caught on the break for a third goal. But I'm pretty sure that Andrzej Rutenbeck will take a lot of heart from the way that his team pressed forward. In fact, at 2-2, it actually looked like it was Cologne who were the more likely team to get a winner. This is grab your ear. John's getting your ear. After that performance, it wasn't a bad performance from Cologne, was it, in the end?
Not a bad performance. The problem is we've given us too much to do in the second half of the season by being utter rubbish in the first half.
Let's look at the big picture. Cologne gave themselves a huge deal to do, but based on performances like this, if Cologne play like that against relegation candidates such as Werder Bremen, do they maybe have a little chance?
A little chance, yeah. Not a big chance, but a little chance, yeah.
Not a big chance, but maybe a little chance. I'm sure Rutenbeck will take half that performance. A lot of the Cologne fans here on the south side have done as well. But that's it from today. It's finished. FC Cologne 2, Borussia Dortmund 3. Talk to you soon.
That was Matt Ford in Dortmund, and now, of course, he is in the studio with us now. And I think it would be a good opportunity after hearing that. We should talk about Michy Batshuayi, because that was the biggest move of the transfer window in January. And obviously, there's these narratives surrounding it with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. But first off, let's go with Jonathan first. What did you think of Michy Batshuayi's debut?
Yeah, I thought it was very lively. It was the most important thing. And for a player that hadn't necessarily had that many training sessions with the team, you know, to make that kind of an impact was really rather impressive. I mean, he doesn't speak German, as his humorous Twitter account proved afterwards. The guy seems to be working on so many levels for Dortmund. You know, he obviously is going to be a good character for the dressing room. He brings a smile and a sense of comedy that the club has maybe lacked, given all the drama that they've had in recent weeks. He's obviously going to be performing on the pitch, given how well he played on Friday night. I thought it was a very encouraging performance from someone who hadn't been there very long. I mean, he could have had more than two goals, and I think that says an awful lot about how well he played.
Now, Matt, of course, Peter Stöger had a striker that he depended on last season, which was Anthony Modesta. You saw Michy Batshuayi in person. Did you see anything similar that between Michy Batshuayi's role right now in Dortmund's team than you did with Modest's role with Cologne's team last year?
No, I think the comparison was more between Michy Batshuayi and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, of course, who is replaced in a more direct sense than any comparison to what Peter Stöger was working with Anthony Modest in Cologne. I think from as the game went on, it became clear that his style of play is going to suit Dortmund really well. I think it's probably pretty much as close as a one-to-one direct replacement for Aubameyang that you're going to find. Although I thought in the opening sort of 10-15 minutes, perhaps it was nerves, it's his debut, new league, new teammates, so maybe it's to be expected. But I thought his touch was a little bit off, and I thought this could be interesting. However, quickly put any of those sorts of thoughts to bed with an absolutely outstanding debut. Two goals, could have been three. He obviously had one disallowed correctly in the end. Could have had two more as well. Also set up Andre Schürrle's goal for Dortmund's winner. So in terms of purely statistically speaking, it was an extremely impressive debut. But I think even off the ball, I thought what stood out to me was the way he was constantly harrying the Cologne back four. I wrote a piece on it earlier highlighting that stood out to me in the first half, pressing them really high, which I thought was actually a little bit ironic given that that's precisely what Peter Bosz wanted Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang doing in order to implement this really sort of high tempo, highly aggressive pressing game that he ultimately failed to implement it in Dortmund. And I think Aubameyang's unwillingness to work hard enough to make that sort of game plan work was one of the most often quoted reasons for the downturn in results under Peter Bosz. I think I highlighted the 4-2 defeat away at Hanover as a good example when due to Aubameyang not pressing Hanover's back four strongly enough. They had the time and the space to play these long balls through, which caused Dortmund so many problems. So I thought that was great to see from Michy Batshuayi. And I think, yeah, John, as you just mentioned there, he certainly brings a humour back to Borussia Dortmund, which is, I think a club definitely in need of that sort of personality. Aubameyang proud of that too, and wasn't an unpopular character in the dressing room until he was perceived to have overstepped the mark. Mm. In a way, it's actually quite perhaps an unusual player to be playing under Peter Stöger. Maybe that's a disservice to Peter Stöger, in that maybe we're pigeonholing him as a rather conservative, conservative coach. And maybe he will now feel that he has the tools and the better equipment and a better platform to play more expansive football than we saw from him in his years at Cologne. Time will tell. However, we've not seen it at Dortmund in the five or six games that he's had so far. They've been relatively uninspired and they're getting the job done, which is not an accusation towards Peter Stöger. He's been brought in to purely steady the ship on an interim basis. I doubt he'll carry on after the summer, so that's not an accusation. However, I think we can ask the question, will the presence of Batshuayi up front, will this encourage Stöger to maybe come out of his shell a little bit and have Dortmund playing the football that their fans want to see?
Let's look at that deal, though, first, because it's a loan deal from Chelsea. To our knowledge, there's no buy option on the loan deal.
Yeah, that's the one drawback, isn't it? I think.
I don't know. It's a drawback. I think it's a sensible idea not to have a buy option, because in January, it's a risk. You know, and as you said, you look at him for the first 10, 15 minutes, you don't know whether that's going to work out. And not all players then have the ability inside of a game after those first 10 minutes to then turn it into a two-goal, one-assist performance.
It's easier to speak in hindsight after a good debut, isn't it?
And obviously now everybody would be like, well, why isn't there a buy clause? Because they really should have bought him. But actually, it's a massive risk. And for him, he wants 6 months of regular playing time to impress in a World Cup year before going back to the Premier League.
Do you think he will go back to the Premier League?
I mean, if he scores 15 goals for Borussia Dortmund, then Chelsea have no other option but to make him a first or second choice striker.
Well, they have Alvaro Morata.
Sure, but I mean, they can't ignore. Batshuayi will then go to them and say, look, how well I'm playing. If you don't promise me now that I'm going to be a first or second choice, then I will leave. That he can give them an ultimatum at that point. And maybe then Dortmund say, hey, Michy, you've had such a great time here. We'll put 30 million on the table and you can come. But I think it's a sensible move because we must really remember, we are only talking about one game.
True. No, I'm not.
And he could. He could
also,
have.
We also don't know who's going to be playing under.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to extrapolate that he's going to score two goals every game. But what I'm just curious because, like, without that buy option for Dortmund, there doesn't really seem to be. It seems like they would still need to find somebody in the summer rather than finding their solution.
But Matt
now.
Makes a very
is
valid.
That okay,
yeah, that's fine because as Matt validly makes the point, you know, they also don't know who their coach is going to be next summer. So for any of the players in that squad, that's a real issue. This is a side in turmoil, and Batshuayi is not going to sign a deal now for next year when he doesn't even know who the coach is going to be. I mean,
that's true.
Quite frankly, Peter Stöger and Michy Batshuayi have got to be one of the most football manager relationships ever. This is the two completely mismatching coach and player combinations that you could have had. Whether that will work out, as Matt says, it'd be interesting to see if it brings Stöger out of his shell. But I think it's a great deal for both parties. I think it can work out really well. Dortmund will benefit. He has a lot to prove. It's a World Cup year. Minimal financial risk.
You'll find scoring goals in the Bundesliga a lot easier than in the Premier League.
Definitely. You'll get an extra 2 or 3 yards. Goalkeepers aren't as good, as this weekend showed.
So, obviously, the transfer window is now closed. And I think this is a good opportunity for us to maybe not look at the whole window, but look at the deals that stood out for us in the January transfer window. Jonathan, you were talking a lot about what Dortmund was doing, so why don't you go first?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Batshuayi. We might as well talk about Dortmund as a collective. I thought that their window was very un-German. I mean, they lost Aubameyang for record fee to Arsenal. They lost Bartra and Subotic. This time last year, we're probably saying that Mark Bartra was Dortmund's best defender. That's how far things have gone wrong. And we have to probably say that a lot of this is down to emotional suffering. The guy has gone through an ordeal and nearly lost his life after the attack on the bus. That weighs heavy on the mind of a player. and he deserves the chance to go back to Spain.
Even if it's more comfortable, it's to you find, can't blame to find, somebody
no,
for that.
Not at all. But
that move makes total sense.
It makes total sense for him. Does, yeah. And the fact that Dortmund gave him such a heavy departure after such a short amount of time here, you know, and sent this video and said, you know, you'll always be a part of the Borussia family. I think that shows how much of an impact he made. But if you think about what that loss is, okay, so you're bringing in Sergio Gomez and Akanji, right, for 20 million, which is, again, a lot to be spending in January.
Gomez, of course, is a forward. He's not a defender.
No, is Gomez a forward?
Yeah, Akanji's the defender.
Okay, right. I mean, there's my ignorance out there. I'm just, in terms of value here.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I'm talking about Akanji being a lot of money for a January buy. But you lose Bartra, who's quickly become a member of the dressing room, an important part of the team. And you lose Subotic, who, quite frankly, is a huge part of this team. This is the guy who played with Hummels when Dortmund were amazing.
Just playing devil's advocate, though, is Nevin Subotic not rather a member of the Dortmund team that was?
No, I totally agree about the transfer. I think it's time to be moving on from players in terms of personality. I'm just talking about the dressing room in what that kind of flux brings in a January window, right? Dortmund have spent a lot more than a lot of teams spent. They've also gained a lot more than teams spent there, but they've made big moves. You know, you lose Aubameyang, who's the third all-time scorer in the club's history. That's a big, big loss in terms of output, even if it was the right move 100% for the dressing room. You lose Subotic, who is a heart and soul of the team and also an all-round fantastic person. That's a heavy loss for the change rooms. Even when he was, after he came back from the loan spell at Cologne, he was still an impact in terms of young players. You bring in Akanji, who's obviously a man mountain and a beast, and is going to, you know, a lot of people expect him to leave Dortmund in 3 years after being brilliant. But I'm just saying, it's a lot of transition.
Yeah, that's a lot of transition. Well, it's a lot of in the middle of a season, too.
Especially, and for a team like Dortmund, who've had so much drama. So I think it's interesting that Batshuayi has now, you know, added his name to that list and could potentially be the cherry on the cake. But it's a lot for January.
Focusing on Dortmund at the back still, I don't think it helps the situation that Toprak really hasn't hit the ground running, really still hasn't settled in. Now,
Socrates has dipped in form.
Maybe that's partly to do with the fact that he's got Toprak playing next to him.
Game for
that's true.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of forget that as well.
But I mean, Toprak having had more than enough Bundesliga experience at Bayer Leverkusen, I expected more, and it can't help. Roman Bürki's also been suspect, and that doesn't help your defence when you know your goalkeeper's a bit dodgy behind you. Obviously, he spilled a shot against Cologne for Cologne's first equaliser.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, I heard people saying that he should have been tipping that further away. No, that's the shot from, I think, Dominic Heinz had the shot, didn't he?
Yeah, it was Dominic Heinz.
It wasn't that powerful. Yeah. I mean, he had to hold that. You're a Bundesliga goalkeeper.
I was talking to Archie about this, and he said the most important thing, top clubs in the world, their goalkeepers save them points. They win them games. And I can't remember the last time that Roman Bürki won Dortmund again.
Of course, I mean, Niels Peterson's lob for Freiburg the other week was spectacular in itself, but even so, and I know Bürki probably stood there, he was trying to act as an extra man for his own teammates without an extra pass, and that's fine, but even so, and he wasn't expecting him to lose the ball, but even so, he then went and got lobbed from 40 yards. The whole defensive unit just seems a little bit unstable to me at the moment.
So if you bring in Akanji, you're hoping that it changes that, but it's still a lot of flux, a lot of change.
What stood out for you, Matt?
Pardon?
What stood out for you in the transfer window, Matt?
Simon Terodde, I think, is the obvious one to go for.
Yeah, you've written about him a lot, so.
Yeah, I did one piece, yeah. It's not been the most spectacular transfer windows, has it, though? And
But it's very German for it not to be in January. That's why I think the Dortmund thing is quite an exception.
But I think Terodde is a really interesting one because, of course, he used to play at Cologne. I believe when they were in the second division. Is that when Terodde played with them?
Yeah, he scored second division goals for both Cologne and Stuttgart.
And Bochum, too.
And Bochum. Yeah, I think as we mentioned before, if you're in a relegation battle like they are, and in fact at one point they weren't even in the relegation battle, they were completely doomed. But he's
There was no battle.
Yeah, there was no battle.
Relegation defeat.
Yeah, now as we heard the lads talking at full time on the live section, there's still a tiny chance. But if that is going to turn into anything a little bit more concrete, then they're going to need a goal scorer who puts them away up front. And he's proven that. He gets us in positions. And I think it's more of a psychological effect, both in terms of Cologne. They know that there's someone in there who can actually put the ball over the line for them. And also it might make opposition defences think twice a little bit, because this is a man in there who, sounds cliche, knows where the goal is. He pops up and he puts them away.
It was curious too, because there was a lot of players like Osako and Seiru Girassi who also, they got in good positions to score, but they couldn't.
Girassi had
off.
A couple of huge chances as well, thinking back.
But now Cologne could have got so much more out of that game. Tirota, in a way, and not maybe not literally, but feeding off of that kind of security.
Oh, no, definitely. So many goals last season came from the likes of Osako and Bittencourt and Jojic when he was on form, but he's a bit hit and miss. Feeding Modeste, and Tirota can play the same role. He's also... Friday night was the first time we've actually seen Tirota play live in the flesh since his missed penalty in Stuttgart earlier this season, which didn't leave a lasting impression on me. But he's a big lad. He's absolutely huge, Simon Tirota. And that's a presence both physically and psychologically for Cologne. Just quickly, although it's not a winter transfer, obviously Tirota wasn't on the score sheet against Dortmund, but Jorge Mere was. I thought that was interesting because he had a goal up front. And he's also...
And who was marking him, by the way, on that corner?
Or not marking him.
Or not marking him.
He was. I think I had a flag covering my view, which tends to happen. And Dominic Heinz and Mary at the back have also had seen Cologne looking a little bit more stable, although the defending for Batshuayi's first goal. Fair play to Batshuayi for his goal, but he was just left in a million miles of space, and it wasn't even like he had to move to get into that space. He stood
there.
Still.
Yeah.
And so that was amateur defending.
The one that I thought was interesting, obviously it's a much more high-profile one, but it's the one Sandra Wagner made. And it's not really interesting in a more of a Bayern sense, because I think it's clear why Bayern did it. We had a huge discussion last year. You guys would have to dig through the archives to find it, about basically the backup striker that Bayern Munich could buy. And now it seems that we found one. But I think there was a lot of, critics in the media that say that it's could really hurt his World Cup chances, but I actually think that's the opposite, because he's kind of proven that if he's given playing time, he can do things. But in terms of a World Cup sense, he needs to practice with players that he will be playing with in the Germany team, and that will look better for
the Bayern team.
That will look better for Löw than it would be if he stayed at Hoffenheim and was banging in goals. I mean, it's not. And he wasn't really banging in goals for Hoffenheim this season, but I thought that was, he seems very confident with the move that he made. I think he understands that he is Lewandowski's backup and he'll maybe start maybe twice a month. But he seems, I mean, maybe it's an overconfidence and an arrogance at times, but he seems confident that his World Cup spot is not in danger by making the move to Bayern Munich.
I think the move, as you say, rightly, to play with Germany internationals is what's going to be to his advantage. He's going to train with them every single day, and that's going to be a huge plus point. But I think it will pay dividends in the next few months of the season when the Champions League comes back.
Right.
And suddenly Bayern are playing twice a week.
Right.
Because then... And this is when you know as a manager whether your policy or your decisions have paid off. If you play Wagner on Saturdays against Augsburg and Werder Bremen, and you play Lewandowski on Tuesdays against Real Madrid and Paris Saint-Germain, and it works, then just sit back and enjoy the sun. But if it doesn't, that's when people will ask questions and say, well, Lewandowski needs more game time to get more into his form and into rhythm, blah, blah, blah.
It's so interesting, though, the balance.
I think there's also something to be said for the idea that even in the Champions League, Sandro Wagner provides an ideal and completely different plan B, which if for whatever reason against the likes of PSG or Real Madrid or whatever it's not working with Lewandowski, then that's something that
they
can bring on and
choice.
Completely change the game, and you got a bit more tactical flexibility.
It reminds me a lot of when they had the two Marios, Mario Mandzukic and Mario Gomez, and they actually, the last time that they were in the Champions League final before that, they had Miroslav Klose and Mario Gomez, mm-hmm. and they kind of split time. So it's interesting to me that Bayern Munich tend to do better in more competitions when they have a solid backup striker. Now, the strikers have complained publicly about not having enough playing time in the past. I'm not saying that they're complaining now, but the strikers like Mario Gomez complained that he wasn't getting enough playing time, and then Mario Mandzukic was upset that they were bringing in Lewandowski, and I think he kind of saw that as a sign that they weren't going to work together and he needed to be shown the door. But if there's one manager that can get it right, it's obviously Jupp Heynckes, considering that he did it in 2013.
Heynckes said as well when Sandro Wagner came on board that he's not averse to playing them both and even going to a 4-4-2, which sounds ancient history these days. And it's certainly not something you would have seen Guardiola doing.
I don't know if they would start that way, but I think
I don't think they start either. But it gives it's that flexibility.
Yeah, if you need somebody to win the ball high. I mean, you saw against Mainz for Bayern that he was holding up the ball extremely well.
But he's been doing that since he was at Darmstadt.
We could even see
it come in quite handy tomorrow night at Paderborn if for whatever reason it's not working quite well.
Against a side that plays 11 at the back, you never know. But the good thing about Wagner
is watch Bayern go 7 up at half time now.
He accepts that role though. You talk about all those strikers, he accepts that role. You know, what is he, 30? He's happy to go there, take the handsome pay packet and be like, I'm fine playing with
he knows this is his last stop.
Because after this he goes down to second division or whatever it is, right?
And this is his last chance to get into the Germany
team, but he will get into the Germany team because Mario Gomez is, unless he scores 15 goals to keep Stuttgart up, even then, that's still a push for me. I mean, Löw might take him because he loves players that have been in the squad for a long time. But he's got Timo Werner to contend with, right? Mario Gomez, and that's it, right? Sandro Wagner is your other option there in terms of actual out-and-out strikers. I mean, lots of midfielders, sure.
I think there's some people that are trying to call for Mark Uth to get in the team. I think it's too late for that now.
I mean, if Mark Uth plays really well and two people get injured, then maybe. But
I mean, Kevin Folland has been playing in his resurgence with Leverkusen. Maybe he could be an option as a forward. But I think you're right.
Out and out striker that he's still not to his squad.
It's very clever that he decided to go to play with players that he's going to play with in the World Cup. I think that Germany could actually very benefit from this transfer, even if Sandro Wagner doesn't benefit. It, in terms of playing time, doesn't benefit
his career
way.
Has changed. He has different priorities now. Yeah. He wants to make the World Cup squad. He doesn't need to win anything. And playing with the best players in Germany is the best way to do that.
Also, I think Joachim Löw knows that a player like Sandro Wagner will score goals at a World Cup.
Exactly. He's that kind of player.
All right, so we brought up a bunch of Hoffenheim strikers at the end of that segment there. So why don't we go to our shot from Rosette this week, which is Nagelsmann's situation at Hoffenheim right now. Thank you for all of you guys for voting once again. This is definitely, I think we can all say that it adds a little extra element that you guys choose the topic for us.
It was exciting towards the end too. I thought Augsburg was going to win, and we had a late comeback from the Nagelsmann topic.
Exactly. So
that's my research out the window.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate that it was so close that we actually had enough people voting that it was a battle between two topics.
We're a poll race.
But the people have chosen, obviously, to go talk about Nagelsmann. And I actually was the one that put this topic in the poll. And the reason why I did is because there was a Bild report last week that suggested that even before the 5-2 loss, Hoffenheim's 5-2 loss in Munich last week, that Nagelsmann was starting to lose the dressing room because he is a very critical coach, and maybe some players think that he's overcritical. And it's interesting to me because this was kind of the same, a similar situation that Tuchel was in last season, in that this was a team that was, I mean, obviously Dortmund was in a different position. I mean, Dortmund was in the cup still. Hoffenheim is out of the cup, I believe. And they're lower in the table, but at the same time, it's a critical coach trying to get these players in the right position so he can do more with the squad that he has available to him. Jonathan, what do you think of Nagelsmann's situation?
It's a difficult one, but I think, you know, the guy's been under a lot of scrutiny in the last few months and years, if we're honest, in terms of how he's led this team from a very young age. I think it's inevitable that at some point he's not going to be winning or drawing or going undefeated for 10 games and having this, you know, glorious results against top teams. It's inevitable that he's going to have his downtime. I think that's just part and parcel. You can't always win. You can't always be successful. Has he lost the dressing room? Well, obviously only the dressing room knows that. He's lost a lot of big players, and that takes adjustment because it's not just the players that you lose, but it's also the characters. If you've lost your Nicolas Sula, your Sebastian Rudi, and your Sandro Wagner, that's your spine right there. And those might be key figures in the dressing room away from their quality. They might be key figures in terms of how the atmosphere is in the dressing room. And you bring in your Dennis Geiger, who plays really well. You've obviously developed him a lot, but maybe he's a different guy. Maybe he reacts differently to your criticism, to how Sebastian Rudi was. You know, and that's something that is a very nuanced part of coaching. You have to really take that into consideration, because how you handle that individual will then affect the entire changing room. Maybe it's difficult for him because of that. It must be hard to keep changing the squad in terms of personnel so often, so regularly, and having to bring in new players to deliver. That must be very difficult. But whether the club has any right to turn around and suddenly start supporting the players and say, oh, well, hold on, yeah, actually, Julian, you know, Hoffenheim are Hoffenheim. They can't start getting above their station. He's done wonders for them. And yeah, in many respects, his name is now in the papers more than they are, because he is that club. But it's a difficult situation. But I think any talk of, you know, losing the dressing room, or he should be, you know, considered looking at his position, is outrageous, really.
Speaking about his position, I mean, Matt, we talked about this off air a lot recently, and basically what ambitions Hoffenheim have as a club. I argue that they're in like kind of this development mold. They're trying to develop the next generation of German internationals, and they're able to give them playing time because they're their own players. We've all talked about it, how the stadium is in the middle of nowhere. It's basically an exit off of the Autobahn. It takes about 2 hours to get there from anywhere interesting.
And they serve alcohol-free beer in the away end, which is something I wouldn't wish upon anyone.
Reasons to not like Hoffenheim. Yeah. Start here.
So do you want to expand on why you think that basically you don't know why Hoffenheim exists?
I think we've mentioned that before. Hoffenheim will be and are whatever Dietmar Hopp wants them to be. I know you, and it is a valid argument to say that they do develop players who then move on. However, I would stop short of saying that that can be a club's identity. The reason for Hoffenheim's existence, even in Dietmar Hopp's mind, cannot be to provide good German players for the national team. That's not the reason that club exists, surely. Maybe ask Herr Hopp. Maybe that is the case. It is what he wants. They can do whatever Hopp wants them to be, because that's the sole reason they exist. Is that frustrating potentially for someone like Julian Nagelsmann? I think yeah, and that's I think one of several factors which could lead to frustration, which could then lead to him losing the dressing room if what our esteemed colleagues at Bild are saying is true. One of them, yeah, frustration at where the club is going. The other aspect that he would be frustrated with would be, as John talked upon, the fact that so many players have left. It's the whole spine of his team. Zula, Rudi, Wagner, Tolian's gone as well. That is obviously going to be frustrating. Nagelsmann has been at the club in various roles for several years. He's an integral part of that club. As John said, if anything, he is the identity at that club. Whether Dietmar Hopp planned it to be that way, I doubt it. But that's what he is. People know about Hoffenheim because of Julian Nagelsmann. And rightly so. He deserves all the plaudits that he's got. The other aspect which could have led to frustration on Nagelsmann's part would have been, well, I think certainly the media attention around it. Now, obviously, he can do nothing about that. All he can do is what he has done and simply just dismiss it and concentrate on his job and remain as professional as possible. However, even so, it's bound to have an effect on him. There's constant pecking away at him, and especially when the media reports are coming, linking him with Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich. It can't be easy just to shut that out. We mentioned briefly, and it's a slight tangent, but Bayern Munich's pursuit of him, I think, has been pretty disgraceful and quite shameful for a club of that stature. I expect better. But yeah, as for Nagelsmann, that's bound to be frustrating. Finally, given that his squad has been that decimated and they're no longer producing the performances and attaining those high levels which he expects, I think there is perhaps a comparison to make with the issues that Thomas Tuchel experienced sometimes at Dortmund. Julian Nagelsmann is very clear in what he wants. He's extremely professional. He's extremely meticulous, extremely thorough. And when he feels that his players are unable to respond or not reaching the level to where they can respond to his demands, maybe he gets frustrated. Tuchel did on occasions at Dortmund and then sort of lashed out verbally at his players. Whether Nagelsmann is also liable to react like that at times, I don't know. I don't know the man personally. However, from a young manager, it wouldn't come as completely unsurprising. I think there are various factors which could have contributed to some frustration there. I don't think he'll stay much longer.
Well, Matt, you touched on this because I mean, 8 months ago, or even less than that, he was basically a strong consideration for the Bayern position. And now if reports are to be believed, he is no longer in the running to be in, at least for right now, to take over Bayern Munich. Jonathan, do you think that is right?
Absolutely. Comes way too soon. I spoke to a couple of people.
Has your opinion changed in the last?
No, I've always thought season? Even before the start of the Europa League campaign, where he disappointed, and in the view of a lot of people, and I think Matt makes a valid point. You know, the media scrutiny on someone like that after you deliver such over expectation, basically kind of results, you exceed those expectations, you perform so well. Then you don't play well. Then you exit the Europa League in an average group, and then you start picking up draws and losing in the league and you're mid-table and no one's talking about you anymore, really. That's only inevitable for me as a result of the players that they've lost and the time it takes to bring in new talent. And you can't expect new talent to be the same as the old talent. It's just part and parcel of the game.
And yet, despite the fact that Nagelsmann has ignored all these reports to the best of his ability, in the absence of any comments from him, and that's quite right, he's gone from wonder kid trainer who's going to take Hoffenheim to whatever level he's going to manage Bayern, yeah. He's going to manage Germany. 6 months later, to being he's a failure. Look at his performance in Europe; exactly. He's an absolute failure.
And that says and a lot. So about...
It's about our media landscape and the sort of culture that we work in. Even for Nagelsmann, who, like I said, has not participated in this at all. He's sat back from the sidelines and watched his own stock go through the roof and then absolutely plummet through no fault of his own, really. Perhaps you can level slight accusations that he should have got out of that group in Europe. But
I don't think he should have gone, even before all of that. I don't think he was ready for the Munich job. I don't think he's ready for it now. I think he needs another 3 or 4 years. I think he's approaching the end of his time at Hoffenheim.
Yeah, the hype's gone around him. He's not created it himself.
I don't think he's ready for the next, the top step. He's ready for next step.
Here's a lot of things that I've heard some people on social media say too, not only through the Tribuna network, but also from other networks that, of course, we're connected with. It's that he needs to win something in order to be validated enough to take a job like Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich.
Well, I think Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich are also two different levels of a job.
Bayern
Munich is the biggest team in Germany.
I'm not trying to conflate the two together.
No, but you know, I think there's a difference there. I almost think that given the flux and the identity issues that Dortmund are in right now, there's an argument you could make that he could get that job and he could do a decent job of it. Bayern Munich right now, biggest club in Germany, want to win the Champions League, will probably be in the Final Four. It is a huge task to manage those kind of egos and that kind of pressure. Managing Borussia Dortmund is also a big task and it requires a lot of work under pressure, but it's a step down from Bayern Munich. It's a different level. I think he's not quite at that level yet, either one. But I think he's ready for something just below that.
But does he need to win something?
But does he need to win something? I don't know. It depends what the clubs in question
would
merit.
Would the level below that
do you think that he needs? That's my question, though. Do you, you think
maybe,
he needs to win something?
I don't think he needs to win something, but what I think isn't relevant.
Of course.
What I think is relevant is the opinion of the club that want to appoint him, because they have to look at what type of manager. He wants to win the Champions League. He has said that. He wants to do that one day. So he knows at some point he's going to have to progress from Hoffenheim. I think Hoffenheim are, a top 10 team? He needs to be a top 6 team coach now, really. And I think that's the step he has to take. Who that is, I don't know. But whoever makes the decision to appoint him has to make the decision. We want a manager that's going to develop young players, has a very clear philosophy, and has a very strong sense of how to play his football. If you give him those three things, then the success should come.
Not sack him after 6 months.
Yeah, then the success should come. You don't appoint someone unless you're a club like Bayern Munich, and that's the job that we've already established he can't take yet. You don't appoint someone because you want them to win you a Pokal or win the league, because there aren't very many teams who can do that. There aren't very many coaches who can do that. You appoint them to develop young players, to bring in a clear philosophy, and to succeed at those two things. And in the outcome of that, you win.
Matt, this is another question that I just thought of that I'm just going to throw out there, because it seems like we all are in agreement that he does need to find... If he wants to progress, he's going to do that away from Hoffenheim. Does he need to go outside of Germany to progress as a coach in order to be able to be on that level for Borussia Dortmund or even higher, Bayern Munich?
Not yet. Although I don't know what his personal situation is, whether he'd be open to that or whether he has ambitions to go abroad.
Of course, that's another fact. I'm just curious in terms of.
No, I think staying within Germany for the time being would be the right option, and I think Borussia Dortmund would ultimately be the right next step for him, provided Dortmund can, get their stuff together and decide what they want to be.
Yeah,
and if they can decide that, and I think Nagelsmann could fit that quite well.
Yeah, I think if Dortmund can figure out what it is that they want to be going forward, do they want to be spending lots of money all the time, or do they actually want to keep developing these young players? I think the criticism of Dortmund for selling these young players is completely unfounded. It's part and parcel of football. They do a great job of bringing players like Christian Pulisic from nowhere to somewhere and then profiting off him. That's just part of the game. But they have those years of development, and he does really well. They need a manager, if that's the kind of club that they want to continue to be, to instill that philosophy going forward. Nagelsmann has a reputation of developing young players and making them better. He's just sold the spine of his team to Bayern Munich. What better evidence do you need to be good at developing young players? All three of those players have gone on to make Germany debuts. Again, what more evidence do you need to suggest that he can develop young players? I agree. Borussia Dortmund looks like a very tempting role, could fit for him personally, but they need to make sure the squad's right in the summer and that there's no noise from upstairs, because that is a problem for a young manager.
All right. Thanks again for all of those who participate in the Shout from Rosette section this week, and we hope you participate again next week. But that'll do it for this week's edition of Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you like what you hear, please give us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcasts. You can follow Matt Ford at Matt_4 and the letter D, Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's, and I'm at Davis_Vanoptor. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. With a brace against Cologne, Michy Batshuayi became the first player to score multiple goals in his Bundesliga debut since Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang did in 2013. Is he, in fact, the next man up? Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.